I'm very pleased to welcome back to View from the Roundhouse for the last time in 2024, Professor Martin Drum, the man who effectively makes everything happen at Notre Dame University, based in Fremantle. Good morning, Martin.
It's great to be here, Michael.
Martin, we've agreed to talk about some of the big things that have happened during 2024. I know our listeners, who I keep running into in the street, love hearing your opinions about this and that. I have to say, it's as well we didn't do this episode last Friday. We would have missed Syria, Martin. What a amazing thing to happen before the end of 2024. And having said that, of course, a week is a long time in politics, and a few days is a long time in international politics. I imagine anything could happen between now and the end of December. But what are the big things that stick in your mind that come up on your diary when you flick through it, Martin, as I don't know, just sort of emblematic of what the world is that we live in?
So a range of things. There's the international, national, state, local, all of those things. So a time of conflict and uncertainty on the international stage. You never quite know what's around the corner, and a lot of existing alliances and natural relationships that have been tested. And probably at the top of that list is the ascension to Donald Trump, of Donald Trump to the US presidency for the second time. Which has stunned many observers, and itself might, cause a major recalibration of on the international scene. No one's quite certain how a lot of the international developments that we've discussed at length will turn out under a Trump presidency. It's not that the world depends on one person, but he does, his signposting as US president will be very important in 2026, I imagine. So that was the culmination, perhaps, of a range of, strange, fluid, unusual events. And you just mentioned the war in the Syrian war. This is the war that has been going for 13 years, Michael. And then in the space of 8 days, all of a sudden the regime collapsed. So a 13-year war, nothing much had happened in the Syrian war of note. People were still fighting on the fringes of Syria. For a good few years and 8 days. I mean, there's a lot of geopolitics around that, Michael. Iran was distracted, Hezbollah was distracted, Russia was distracted. Three key allies of theirs were off doing other things, and perhaps the regime itself was a bit complacent. But that sent shockwaves because, as you know, Syria's right bang smack in the middle of Israel and Iran.
Well, it's also interesting that the supreme leader of Iran, who's obviously a bit annoyed for all the reasons you've said, they were busy doing other things, is of course saying that the whole rebel success in Syria is because the folk in Israel and the folk in Washington, D.C. put their heads together and engineered the whole thing. Is there anything in that?
No, I think it's more complex than that. And there's, I think Turkey has definitely had a role, and they saw the right time and the right place. They've been seeking influence events there. Israel is taking advantage of it somewhat, but I don't think I'd be overstating Israel's direct involvement. I think that they probably want to take advantage of it by securing some key sites. But it has been, it certainly comes a bit as a fair shock to even people that are seasoned observers weren't expecting this.
Martin, the other thing that's happened this year, every day this year, and continues to happen as we sit and talk this morning and our listeners listen to us, is Israel and Gaza, Gaza and Israel. It just doesn't stop. It started on the 7th of October last year, and every day this year has continued to see bombardments, women, children, and others killed. Australia's just voted, with most nations in the world, bar a few, Israel and US, two of the exceptions, to call for a permanent ceasefire. That really is Perhaps, do you think the biggest story of the year, or do we give that to Trump?
I probably still have Trump just because of all those early remarks that I made about his ability to recalibrate international alliances. But the Israel-Gaza war has been horrific. You can add the Hezbollah front that's expanded this year, Michael, that wasn't there last year, not direct confrontation. But the thing about that is it's the horror of that has assaulted our television screens, our social media, all elements of our lives, and it's impacted on Western communities and societies in a way that wars overseas often don't for that reason. And the investment of various people in Australia, the US and UK in that conflict far exceeds other conflicts like the Sudanese conflict, which has killed even more people, but we don't hear about. So, yeah, that's the other element and dimension of it, Michael, that is quite unique. And then I'd probably add, Michael, the recent anti-Semitic attacks in Australia that emanate that are linked in various ways, complex ways, to what's happened overseas there. So there's a lot of dimensions which are really cutting home here in Australia.
You can sort of take a ruler and swing your globe on the desk in front of you and then point it anywhere you like. And there's a big story this year, Martin. I suppose if you stay in the Northern Hemisphere for a few moments, the Keir Starmer Labour success in England is one of the big stories, although perhaps everyone expected it to happen and it was just a fizzle in the end.
I think this was a bit of a, the Titanic hitting the iceberg, Michael. The Conservatives in the UK had been drifting for a long time towards defeat. They'd gone through four different prime ministers. The public had had enough. You had the Boris Johnson sort of fiasco, do as I say, not as I do, COVID and all of that. I think that was probably coming a mile off. And the difference between Starmer and Trump is, haven't seen from Starmer any radical recalibration of the UK's role in world affairs. He's largely continuing, the track that Sunak and others before him have had. And I think that's what's different about Trump is, will he do things completely differently? Or, we don't really know. I think that's the unknown there that's got people, really intrigued.
Martin, similarly, if we get on the Eurostar from London and shoot across to Paris and pop up, we'll probably wonder what on earth's going on in the streets of Paris. That everyone says, of course, that the favourite sport of Frenchmen is protest. And of course, they've just sacked their prime minister. The President Macron stays in place, but that's one of the big stories of the year as well. Where's it going?
I think that's a really interesting story in France. It's about the hollowing out of the centre in certain democracies. And you've got a far right, which has got a significant bloc there in the French Parliament. You've got this left coalition that's a mixture of centre left and far left elements. And then no real centre right, which is Macron's mob. They've actually been diminished. And I think it's emblematic of people being frustrated with the status quo and looking for alternatives. And of course, this is an own goal for Macron, Michael, because he's the one that called the election early and got that result.
Well, a place they don't have to have too many elections because it goes against the national grain, it seems, is Russia. And President President Putin seems to be cemented in his position and also seems to be cemented in his position to keep on fighting in Ukraine. Is that just a superficial take?
It's Russia's been doing okay in Ukraine. They've actually had the upper hand. Not that you're hearing much about that of late, just from the sheer amount of resources he's poured in there. But of course, Russia's had a major blow in the past week, Michael, in that one of the key allies in the Middle East that they've been propping up was the Assad regime, and that's just fallen to pieces in a matter of days. So that would worry him. That's a loss of influence there. It also signposts that even if Putin's on your side, you can't really guarantee that he'll stick with you, and that will cover you. So I think that's a bit of a blow for him. So it's a mixed bag, and who knows what Trump will provide. Trump seems to like Putin, but at some stage, because of the domestic audience, he'll need to pull Putin into line on Ukraine and demand a peace settlement. What that the terms that are, Michael, who knows?
Martin, just about everything I know about South America is based on the famous novel 100 Years of Solitude by Gabriel Marquez Garcia. And they're turning it into a Netflix television series quite soon. And I can't wait to see it. It's such an amazing place for politics. I mean, it seems to be extreme left-right military takeovers, wonderful people, great singers, good footballers. Tennis players, good rugby players, polo players. Where does South America fit in the scale of tumultuous things this year, Martin?
It has been a tumultuous time, particularly in Brazil. One of the things about Brazil is it's a bit of a winner-takes-all situation. And often we see former presidents, looting candidates, etc., dragged through the courts, censured by parliament, all sorts of things. That leads to a very tumultuous democracy. I wonder whether that leads to consistent, solid outcomes. But all those things you say about Brazil and indeed about many of the countries of South America, they're really intriguing. the life and energy. Brazil is a significant player with over 200 million people. And it's one of the it's one of the top 20 economies in the world, and it's probably going to be demanding more of a place at the table in all those international forums.
Martin, I'd get a quick text message, I think, from President Xi if I didn't mention China, but China has probably had a fairly sedate year all in all. They're busily trying to economically dominate the world. They're in Africa, Asia. They're trying to take over the whole of electric vehicle making. They seem influential. President Biden thinks they could probably help solve the Ukraine problem. What about China? Have they become our great friends?
China, and watch next year for the China-US relationship, Michael. What will it be like? Let me give you two synonymous, concurrent things. On the one level, the whole platform of Trump was tariffs and whacking them on and stopping the cheap Chinese imports. And so it's a shot across the bow at China. On the other hand, personally inviting President Xi to his inauguration. And apparently, at times, he's praised President Xi behind the scenes, Trump. So, what type of Trump will we see next year when it comes to China? How will China react? I mean, they're the two most powerful countries in the world. We're stuck in the middle of them. One's our security partner, the other one's our trading partner. It'll affect us. I think that'll be a fascinating one to watch.
Martin, another one of the really, really big stories, which we'd be neglectful if we didn't mention it, is Australia spending something like $600 billion to help fund a Papua New Guinea team in the Australian Rugby League competition. Now, that's real news, Martin.
It is a real news, and I think there'll be some punters in Western Australia a bit disappointed because their bid in PNG outbid our bid in terms of getting to the NRL. But that aside, it's soft power. This is money. Look, you might look at it and go, $600 million from the federal government to establish a rugby team. That's just money down the gurgler. But it's actually not a. It's about the partnership with PNG, and it's about a cultural and social connection to Australia. And rugby is very popular in PNG. And to have a national team, in effect, it's a club team, but it'll be a national team in the NRL, I think does actually cement cultural and social ties between ourselves and PNG. And will probably be a lot more effective than some of the other development money that we might put there. So it may well just be a clever investment in terms of extending our connections north of Australia.
Martin, We've mentioned Ukraine in various contexts this morning, but it has to be said, President Zelensky has been a complete star attraction all year on so many fronts. You only have to go and have coffee, run into someone you haven't seen for a while, and you finish up talking about President Zelensky, about the television shows about him, about how he went off to Russia as a young man. Russian's his first language, and he was a great success there. He became a television star. He's become a president, and he fights as a true patriot for his country. What do you think we'll be saying about the Ukrainian situation this time next year?
I think we'll be discussing the terms that Trump is seeking to impose on both parties. I think that's what we'll be talking about. Trump's said that he intends to find a solution to this. And in some ways, he definitely has a lot of whip hand here because the entire Ukraine fighting effort is dependent on US supplies. And Zelensky does actually have to listen to Trump. He's got no hope of repelling Russians without US support. And the US does have some capacity, if they want to up the ante against Putin. They can give ever more powerful weapons to Ukraine. They could threaten to allow Ukraine to strike deeper into Russian territory if they wanted to, or they can bring them to the negotiating table. So I do think US has a lot of leverage in that conflict, and we'll see how much leverage Trump wants to impose.
Martin, I've been doing my best to cover the continents. We'll get back to Australia, but Africa, you've touched on it. You've mentioned the countless suffering, deaths, and the like, Sudan and so on. But it just seems to bubble and burst and gribble and grubble, Africa. People who go off there to do mining business get arrested, and big deals have to be done before you can leave. Is anything remarkable happened in Africa this year that we need to note?
I can't say it's an area of my expertise. Obviously, we talked about the Sudanese conflict, which has been awful and created another refugee crisis that perhaps we don't see on our screens nearly as often. There's interesting stories around development, both in terms of West Africa, but also in the southern part of the continent as well. You're seeing some fairly major developments in South African politics as well, ructions within the ANC ruling coalition that have been there for decades, ever since Nelson Mandela. I think that's starting to fracture now because people have different ideas about the direction of the government and the country. And also, some elements of the ANC have been so tainted by corruption that they can no longer be supported by their own members. That's the sort of fracturing of South African politics will be an interesting story going forward. At the same time as the country overall is growing and developing and becoming somewhat of a spokesperson for the African continent generally. So watch that space.
Martin, let's come to this other continent called Australia, big island, number of states and territories. Western Australia, of course, the economic powerhouse of the national economy, Martin. And it's just been announced yesterday that the state government, one way and the other, has approved Woodside's 50-year development with gas in the Northwest Shelf. What's that all about, Martin? Does that key into the big election year that we're just about to have in 2025, both federally and statewise?
It's going to be an element of the WA state election in particular, and that does have some ramifications for the federal election. So the WA state election, we still expect to come first, Michael. Environment will be an issue there, mostly around competition between Labor and the Greens. I don't think we're going to get a Zach Kirkup style green initiative from the Liberals this time around. I suspect that they'll vacate that turf and look for other policy issues to push. But certainly, I think that the Greens have a better chance in the upper house than they did previously and will be seeking to make an impact there. And I think the number one issue they'll look at is the energy debate going forward and whether we're pushing renewables enough versus the traditional energy sources. And certainly, the Woodside extension will come into that debate.
I suppose in that same context, this year we've not really had a debate about nuclear power, civil power. We certainly have had debates around the Virginia-class nuclear-powered submarines coming into Garden Island, HMAS Stirling. But do you expect we'll continue to hear more about nuclear?
Well, the nuclear debate is going to be a massive issue, I suspect, at the upcoming federal election. And you've just seen that some costings literally being released this morning. They're going to be heavily debated because the AEMO and CSIRO have both come up with different calculations on the cost of nuclear to the coalition's costing. So that's going to be heavily debated. And Labor will try to weaponize the nuclear issue, I expect, against the coalition. So it means that Dutton is not the same small target that Albanese was. This is their big ticket policy item, and I expect it'll be dissected and debated and campaigned on from both sides come April or May or whenever this federal election is going to be called.
Now, New Zealand might have become a state of Australia at Federation, Martin. They narrowly were cut out, probably to their everlasting happiness. I'm sure the Maori people are particularly pleased. They've had an interesting year, change of government. Anything dramatic we need to report on?
Well, we're already seeing some implications of that change of government. Different tract when it comes to the environment. A different tract. You'll be familiar with that bill that the ACT Party, that's further to the right, a bit more libertarian party, that's in government, a junior party in government, brought on a bill to remove what they say are special rights for Maori people and what Maori people believe are essential rights that emanate right back to the treaty, excuse me, the Treaty of Waitangi. That was a particularly emotional issue, and that led to Maori demonstrations out in the streets in a number of those major cities in New Zealand. And you don't often see that level of protest and activism. New Zealand's a much smaller place, so that was really an extraordinary development in New Zealand politics, and that issue probably wouldn't come up in the same way under a Labor government. So you've got a three-party coalition there, and they don't all agree on a number of things. So you're going to have some interesting, I think, debates come up next year as well under that. Under the current New Zealand government.
Martin, it would also be neglectful to fail to say the word India. It's a big country with China. It dominates the planet in so many ways. What can we expect to see happening in China? More of the same. Sorry, in India, more of the same over the next 12 months?
Yeah, I think that will be an interesting one because of how fractured a lot of these international relations are. India has a fairly unique opportunity to really play the independent broker, and they already are. So they've maintained good relationships with Russia, and two-way trade has continued. They're not part of one particular bloc or another. And because of their growing economy, they're going to become more and more important. And a lot of people are looking to diversify so they're not so reliant on, say, Chinese imports, et cetera, are looking to India as an alternative. Australia is no different to other countries in that respect. So I think there's a real opportunity for India going forward to project their influence and power further.
Martin, we had COP29 in Azerbaijan not long ago. You're sort of left with the impression that not all that many countries are taking the Paris Agreement and the need to get to net zero by 2050 as seriously as they seem to be taking it a few years ago. What do you think?
I don't see the same momentum through the COP process that we might have seen previously. And we've talked multiple times about how fractious the international climate is, Clearly, with the Trump election, I don't think we're going to get a lot of energy to and movement towards more environmentally friendly energy sources in the US. So I think that will that's important. You've got to remember that China and the US are the two largest polluters internationally. So if they're not moving, it's very, very difficult to make a lot of progress here. There is an interesting proposal for wealthier developed countries to provide money to developing countries to enable them to fight climate change. It's been tossed around. If it's implemented, that might be a really significant development. But again, so much domestic politics is going to be working against that, Michael. So I don't not expecting a lot of movement there either.
Martin, we've covered a lot of topics. Do you have others on your list that we, again, would be remiss in not mentioning?
Oh, well, I think it may be a broad nod for all of our local punters here, Michael. We're at a bit of a seminal moment, I think, in the local economy. We're trying to wrestle with significant changes with the Fremantle Port scheduled to shut down not too far away, sort of short to medium term, and a need to look for a whole range of other things to stimulate our local economy. And I think that for people to have open discussions around that is really critical and important.
And on that topic, the Shipping News has been posting articles, responses from the Westport Harbour developers, and from local knowledgeable Fremantle people with their letters to the editor. And of course, we're all waiting to find out what the future of Fremantle, a port given to government 6 months ago, has to say. I'm expecting to hear something from government, I hope, sometime soon. They're very slow and provided me with a non-responsive, evasive answer this week about which I've written. But none of that surprises anyone. That's what you almost come to expect of governments very often these days, a little bit despairingly. But never fear, Martin. The Shipping News will be here next year, and more importantly, so will view from the Roundhouse with Professor Martin Drum. We need to, though, wish all of our listeners far wide, near and far, a very wonderful festive season, Martin.
Indeed, and I know there are listeners all across the country that are tuning in to this fabulous ongoing podcast. We enjoy doing it, Michael. We have a great time, and but we're really pleased with our listeners that they keep us on our toes, and they always give us a bit of feedback on as to how we're going.
Oh, the other bit of news I should mention, although people have to keep it secret, I've received a message during the week, and I'll just say it softly. Fremantle Dockers apparently are slated to win the 2025 AFL Premiership season.
Well, that's a just don't tell too many people, Michael. All right, so we'll just keep that between us.
Thanks, Martin.
That prediction.
See you next year, Martin.
See you next year, Michael.